Good evening and welcome to the Friday edition of the KRFP Evening Report for November 10th, 2023. On today's show, Avista starts the relighting process for methane natural gas on the Palouse and in the LCU Valley, which should continue at least until Tuesday before full service is available. And we'll hear about the dangers of methane and hear from climate activists who rallied in Moscow today to stop the pressure increase on the GTN Express pipeline through the Idaho Panhandle in eastern Washington. But first, world headlines from FSN and a roundup of regional news.
From a feature story news in Washington, I'm Benji Heyer. Intense fighting and firing is engulfing the streets around hospitals in Gaza, with patients trapped inside. Israel's confirmed its military is operating close to the biggest hospital in Gaza City, where explosions and shelling have been heard. An Israeli Defense Forces spokesman says the army will do what it needs to do if the militant group Hamas fires from hospital grounds. This as the United Nations Human Rights Chief calls for an investigation into what he says is Israel's use of high-impact weapons in this war. The Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza claims more than 11,000 people have died in the Palestinian territory since October 7th. William Denzelow is at the UN headquarters in New York.
Speaking at a news conference in Jordan, the UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk said Israel's extensive bombardment was having a devastating humanitarian and human rights impact. Israel's UN mission in Geneva responded, saying that, unlike terrorists, it abides by international humanitarian law. Israel has bombarded the Palestinian enclave since the attack on October 7th. When Hamas killed around 1,400 people.
Police in the UK are bracing for the largest pro-Palestinian protest in the past month, warning of a risk of clashes in the streets of London over the weekend. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak feels the timing of the march, though, is disrespectful, as it coincides with Armistice Day, commemorating the end of World War I, a time to remember those that have given their lives for Britain. 1.6 million people in Somalia are being affected by unusually heavy seasonal rains, a once-in-a-century event. Dozens have been killed in past weeks and more than 300,000 displaced, with more torrential downpours to come. And the White House has today confirmed that President Joe Biden will meet Chinese President Xi Jinping in San Francisco next week. It'll be their first face-to-face meeting in a year and comes at a time of continuing tensions between the two superpowers. Nick Harper reports from Washington.
The long-anticipated meeting has now been confirmed, White House officials saying Biden will indeed meet with Xi next Wednesday, while both men are in San Francisco for the Asia-Pacific Economic Partnership Forum. According to his team, Biden is looking to stabilize the relationship and create a framework to better manage it. But the president, we're told, will also press assertively on a number of issues of contention, including North Korea, the South China Sea, and Beijing's close relations with both Russia and Iran amid the war in Ukraine and the Israel-Hamas conflict.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Avista is beginning the relighting process this afternoon for the estimated 37,000 customers who use natural gas, which is mostly methane, for cooking and heating on the Palouse and in the Lewiston-Clarkston area. At a press conference at 11 a.m. this morning, Avista Chief Operations Officer Heather Rosentrater said crews had completed the shutoff of all gas lines at homes and businesses in the region, and the line has been repressurized.
I am happy to share that we've essentially completed another important phase of the restoration process. The safety shutoff process is essentially complete. And this was supported by over 260 Avista employees who amassed over 3,000 hours of work time to get this phase done. And we are now able to begin the next step of restoration process, which is our customer relights. And thanks to our amazing employees, our peer utilities, our HVAC responders, by the end of the day today, we expect to have over 500 responders in the area supporting this final restoration step.
That was Avista Chief Operations Officer Heather Rosentrater speaking at a press briefing at the Avista Service Center on the Pullman Highway near Pullman this morning. We'll hear the entire press briefing later in this newscast. The Avista utility has released maps showing zones for relighting methane appliances, which are available on the company's website. Avista employees will be knocking on the doors of every natural gas customer in the region in order to access gas appliances to check on the relighting process and make sure it goes correctly. Relighting crews will be going door to door to homes and businesses between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. until the process is completed in the next few days. For Moscow, the map says Zone 1, which is the southwestern part of the city, including the University of Idaho campus and most of downtown, relighting is expected to take place this afternoon through Saturday afternoon. Relight Zone 2 in Moscow is part of the city north of the Pullman Highway and west of Polk Street. That zone relighting will take place between Saturday p.m. and Monday a.m. Relight Zone 3 in Moscow is the eastern part of the city and points east, and relight crews will be in that area starting Monday morning, hoping to complete by Monday evening. Pullman Relight Zone 1 is the southwestern part of the city. Relight in that zone will be between Saturday a.m. and Saturday p.m. Pullman Relight Zone 2 is the northeastern part of the city, generally north of Main Street, including the areas around the WSU campus and extending out to the airport. Workers will be in Relight Zone 2 between Saturday p.m. and Sunday a.m. Pullman Relight Zone 3 is the northwest part of the city. Relight crews will be working there between Sunday a.m. and Sunday p.m. Pullman Relight Zone 4 is the southeastern part of the city. Relight crews will be in that area between Monday a.m. and Monday p.m. The relight zone for Troy, Deary, and Beauville is called Moscow Relight Zone 4. Avista relight crews will be there between Monday a.m. and Tuesday a.m. Workers will be relighting gas appliances in Genesee, Colton, and Uniontown starting Saturday p.m. through Sunday a.m. Crews were working in what is called Pullman Relight Zone 0 this morning, which extends north from Albion to Palouse. City of Pullman officials declared an emergency Wednesday, and Latah County Commissioners declared an emergency yesterday. Latah County Commissioner Tom Lamar told KRFP today the commissioners had been contacted by business owners and others who have lost money due to the methane shutoff.
By implementing an emergency declaration, it gives us some options. Whether or not we use those options, I don't know, but it might help with acquisition or making decisions about anything, any money we need to spend or anything we need to do to help people or help the situation. So it just gives us an opportunity to be ready, and potentially there might be other funding available to replace some of those that money spent. So whether or not there will be any state of Idaho Office of Emergency Management money, IOEM, I don't know if that will be the case, but if it is, then this is the first step to make that possible.
We'll hear more from Commissioner Lamar later in the newscast. Williams Companies reported late yesterday they fixed the underground natural gas pipeline, which disrupted service to the region's 37,000 natural gas customers, but Avista Utilities says it will take 3 to 5 days to fully restore service. Avista, which has brought in a large team of workers, says their employees will have to enter homes to relight gas pilots and cautions gas customers should not attempt to relight pilots themselves. Schools, restaurants, and other workplaces that require natural gas to operate were closed across the Palouse and in the Lewiston-Clarkston Valley yesterday due to the ruptured gas line near Pullman, and most were unlikely to open today. Avista said it was the largest natural gas service disruption in the company's history. The affected communities are Pullman, Moscow, Albion, Palouse, Uniontown, Colton, Genesee, Troy, Beauville, Deary, Lewiston, Clarkston, and Assotin. Officials in the city of Pullman and Latah County declared emergencies. All city of Pullman and Latah County offices were closed yesterday and today, except for essential services. The University of Idaho canceled classes yesterday and remained closed today. All non-essential offices are also closed on the UI campus. Washington State University power plant operators switched to diesel when they learned of the pipeline rupture, and classes continued. Lewis-Clark State College in Lewiston said they made some adjustments and continued holding classes. Most schools in the region were closed yesterday and remained closed today, either due to the lack of natural gas or because of previously scheduled Veterans Day three-day weekend observances. Two out of three of the region's largest private employers were impacted. Clearwater Paper issued a press release that said certain operations at their Lewiston plant were temporarily suspended, but did not specify what was suspended and what was not. A spokesperson for Vista Outdoor, which owns the CCI Bullet Factory in Lewiston, said in a text to the Lewiston Tribune the company was impacted, but also did not specify how. Schweitzer Engineering Laboratories, which builds electricity distribution systems, said their operations have not been significantly impacted by the methane shutoff. SEL Vice President of Security Fran Harrell said the company's work has continued at their sites in Moscow, Lewiston, and Pullman. Many restaurants in the region use natural gas to heat water and were forced to close because health codes require hot water to be available for hand washing. The Lewiston Tribune reports a landowner 4 miles north of Pullman along U.S. Highway 195 ruptured the 12.75-inch gas transmission line with a plow. The pipeline is owned by Williams Companies. Avista contracts with Williams for the wholesale delivery of methane in the region. Northwest Energy Coalition consultant Ben Otto told the Lewiston Tribune, "Williams is like a giant international conglomerate that owns major infrastructure projects and, in particular, a lot of gas distribution, so they are a major gas line company. The name of the transmission line that ruptured is Lewiston Lateral." Washington Utilities and Transportation Commission Director Scott Rookie said an initial investigation indicates the person running the plow that broke the transmission line did not notify authorities before starting work. The usual rule is to call 811 at least 2 days before work. He said the line was buried 41 inches deep at the point of rupture, which he said was adequate depth. Rookie said the legal depth would probably be about 30 inches. Rookie said transmission pipeline owners mark them with four-foot-high yellow posts. Speaking about whether the markers were present at the rupture site north of Pullman, Rookie said, "There were markers there. They weren't in the field. Markers don't last in farm fields. They usually put them on the end of the fields or where they are not going to get damaged." Ruptured pipelines can explode. 3 children died when a pipeline exploded in Bellingham, Washington. Kenneth Clarkson of the Pipeline Safety Trust in Bellingham said his organization started as a result of the Bellingham explosion. Clarkson told the Lewiston Tribune the pipeline first leaked 250,000 gallons of gasoline into a creek in the city and then ignited in a huge fireball. He said it burned and killed everything within a couple-mile radius, including 3 boys. Clarkson said transmission lines are between 6 and 48 inches in diameter and are pressurized between 200 and 1,500 pounds per square inch. Because building and burying pipelines is expensive, it's difficult to change or modernize the distribution system. Otto said the danger is one reason to decarbonize the grid and move away from natural gas. He said, it is one of the things we talk about when we talk about decarbonization and going all electric. You remove the risk of this explosive fuel running into people's homes. We'll have more on the region's methane shutoff later in today's newscast. Republican State Senator and Legislative Medicaid Management Task Force co-chair Julie Van Orden of Pingree says Idaho lawmakers want more oversight of the Medicaid program. Van Orden said the committee is recommending the state move forward with its value-based care model, but with greater legislative input and oversight. The task force met for the first time this week to make recommendations. According to the Idaho Press, Van Orden said, I would just like the public to know that we are not moving in a direction to remove Medicaid from the state of Idaho. We're just trying to find a way to make this an efficient system, like possibly putting more eyes onto it. The task force began circulating a draft of its final recommendations and draft legislation. The draft report is not final, and task force members agreed to sign off on the report via email. Van Orden said they have not drawn conclusions about the benefits of Medicaid to state residents. She said, we are not moving in a direction to remove Medicaid from the state of Idaho. We want to still serve the populations that need Medicaid and need assistance, and we're trying to find a way to make this an efficient system. The committee approved a motion to recommend draft legislation by a 5-4 vote. The legislation would form a year-round committee to review and discuss Medicaid. Republican Senator Kevin Cook of Idaho Falls said he wanted lawmakers to stay with the germane committees that only meet for part of the year or use other committees when they consider policy. Cook said committee members should be proficient in Medicaid. He said they should have all the knowledge. I'm not too thrilled on the idea of creating another committee. I realize that leaves me out in the cold, but I trust we have some pretty smart legislators in both the House and Senate germane committees, so I don't think it's needed. Van Orden said, the reason I support this is because our germane committees meet once a year. This committee would be meeting more than once a year, and I think it would be more than what we've had before. What I've heard from this committee is they want more structure and more times to have a look at what's going on with our Medicaid program. The lone Democrat on the task force, Senator Melissa Wintrow of Boise, expressed concerns about another committee, which she said would move the legislature toward a full-time service as opposed to the 3 or 4 months they currently meet most years. Wintrow said the current task force already requires a significant workload. Cook said he has prepared amendments to bring to lawmakers this coming session. He said the report, quote, makes the assumption that we as a committee made a decision, and I don't think at this point we have. The task force approved the draft legislation, which would establish a review panel to oversee Medicaid. Once finalized, the report will be presented to lawmakers when they return to Boise in January. University of Idaho students have organized a vigil for Monday to mark the one-year anniversary of the quadruple knife murders of UI students in an off-campus rental home near the UI campus. A University of Idaho press release says the vigil, which will be open to the public, will take place on the University of Idaho Administration Building lawn next Monday, November 13th, at 6 p.m. The UI press release says the Vandal family across the state and beyond is encouraged to turn on their porch lights from 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific time in solidarity. 4 students will speak at the event in memory of Ethan Chapin, Zaina Kernodal, Madison Mogan, and Kaylee Gonsalves. Those were the 4 murder victims. Each of the people who will speak are representatives of a Greek chapter with which the victims were associated. The speakers include Heather Blackska of Pi Beta Phi, Zanna Miller of Pi Beta Phi, Darius Myers of Sigma Chi, Madison Whitney of Alpha Phi, and Associated Students of University of Idaho President Tanner McLean. Candidate for Spokane Mayor Lisa Brown's lead increased slightly over Republican Nadine Woodward last night with a new vote tally available. Brown, who is associated with the Democratic Party, has a 1,741 vote lead over the current mayor, which was an increase of 161 votes over Tuesday night's tally. Spokane election officials say there are about 16,200 ballots that have not been counted in the city of Spokane. The Spokesman Review reports it will be difficult for Woodward to catch up with Brown because she will need 55% of the remaining ballots to catch up. Liberals won all but one of the city council seats up for election this year in Spokane. Betsy Wilkerson is likely to win city council president as she had 1,540 votes more than her opponent as of last night. You're tuned into KRFP Moscow Pullman. This is the KRFP Evening Report.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by the Moscow Food Co-op, specializing in food, goods, and programs that nourish and nurture our community. The Moscow Food Co-op is located at 121 East 5th Street. For more information, visit moscowfood.coop, call 882-8537, or find them on Facebook.
Whitman County election officials announced new results for local mail-in elections yesterday at 5 p.m. The county auditor's office reported they had counted 6,218 ballots countywide and that there are an estimated 3,500 ballots remaining to count. Ballots postmarked by Tuesday are still trickling in to elections offices. However, there are few close races in Whitman County. Pullman City Councilmember Francis Benjamin is winning the election for mayor against former Pullman teacher Deb McNeil, 1,832 votes to 1,567 votes, which is 53.6% for Benjamin. The winner will replace Glenn Johnson, who is stepping down after 20 years as mayor. In the closest race in Pullman for the at-large seat on the 7-seat Pullman Council, Eric Fajerin is leading Holly Greystone, 1,607 votes to 1,464. In that race, Fajerin now has 51.6% of the vote. In the race for a Ward 3 City Council seat, which represents the southeastern part of the city plus the Washington State University campus, incumbent Pat Wright is leading challenger C.J. Robert, 540 votes to 372. In the race for a Ward 1 seat, Ann Parks has 1,624 votes compared to 384 votes for Dan Marr. Marr had previously announced he had dropped out of the race, but his name remained on the ballot. In the one contested Pullman School Board race in Subdistrict 3, Craig Nelson is leading James Everman. Nelson has 2,523 votes as of yesterday afternoon compared to Jim Everman, who had 1,040 votes. Also as of yesterday afternoon, Tim Sievers was leading April Borden for mayor of Palouse, 236 votes to 106. For Palouse City Council Seat 5, Whitman County election results show 279 voted for a write-in candidate with 66 votes for the only candidate on the ballot, Lisa Newman.
Medal of Honor recipients will be honored this weekend for Veterans Day. The Medal of Honor is the highest award in the nation for valor on the battlefield. On Sunday, a Salute to Service halftime show at the Dallas Cowboys football game against the New York Giants will honor 16 recipients, including Seattle native Lieutenant Colonel William Swenson.
I'll be out there on the field on that day. What we'll be representing, though, is the character of all Americans and the heroism that all Americans have access to through their everyday lives.
President Abraham Lincoln created the Medal of Honor 160 years ago. It's a highly selective award, with only about 3,500 people receiving it, of which 65 are alive today. The Medal of Honor Museum is being built in Arlington, Texas, and Congress has approved a monument for the award in Washington, D.C. New legislation in Congress this year would ensure the monument is located within 1,000 feet of the Lincoln Memorial. The museum has also announced its leadership institute, known as the Griffin Institute, in honor of King Griffin, who gave the museum $30 million. Head of the National Medal of Honor Museum Foundation, Chris Cassidy, says the museum is meant to highlight the many ways people serve the country, including as first responders, police, nurses, and teachers.
The future of our nation depends upon people volunteering to serve in whatever capacity that is. So that's what we aim to do, is inspire people for service through programs in our institute and visitation of our museum and walking along the National Mall and seeing all the inspirational things that are already there.
Swenson says the museum's Leadership Institute will play a critical role.
Ultimately, it's the character that's the most important thing about the Medal of Honor. So the Griffin Institute will ensure that this character is projected out into a broader space, and we will change the lives of Americans with these stories.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A new scientific report from a wildlife conservation group details the potential impacts of climate change on Montana jobs and the environment. For the first time, the report combined state and national climate assessment data. The report, released by the Montana Wildlife Federation and based on what it calls the best available science, predicts an annual loss of 8,800 outdoor recreation jobs and a $263 million economic impact in lost wages by mid-century due to the effects of climate change. Federation President Frank Zelassie says the effects will be felt most strongly in Montana's iconic national parks.
Glacier and Yellowstone, accounting for about 43% of the total job impacts and 41% of the total labor income losses. Montana's hunters, anglers, and outdoor enthusiasts, you know, were the first to witness the changing climate's tangible effects.
The report says the average temperature in Montana is projected to rise at least 6 degrees by mid-century. August would see the biggest warm-up. The report bases its findings on a combination of state and national climate assessment data, allowing researchers to dig deeper into the science. Donovan Power, a research scientist with his own environmental consulting company, says this localized climate data makes climate change predictions for Montana more accurate.
The data has just become a lot more specific in our ability to predict how that's going to impact things like the ski industry or snowmobiling, for example.
Warmer, wetter winters are likely to affect those recreational areas that rely on heavy snowfall in the wintertime. In the future, Power says, they're likely to see more rain instead, creating a huge drag on these tourism and economic drivers for Montana. For Big Sky Connection, I'm Mark Moran.
And you're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman. The largest school bonds on the ballot this week in Idaho lost. The Pocatello-Chubbuck School District had a $45 million bond on the ballot, which would have enhanced the district's two high schools, one of which was heavily damaged by a fire in the spring. 56% of the voters supported the bond, but in Idaho, bonds need a two-thirds supermajority to pass. There was unprecedented voter turnout in the Shelley School District, where voters struck down a $67.8 million bond vote. Most other bonds passed in Idaho, including in the Nampa, Kellogg, Minidoka, Wallace, and Middleton School Districts. You're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. We'll be back in a moment.
KRFP thanks its listeners and supporters, including the Palouse Folklore Society, celebrating traditional music and dance on the Palouse since 1982. The Palouse Folklore Society sponsors concerts, jam sessions, and a monthly contra dance. Find out more at palousefolk.org or on Facebook.
We now turn to our first featured segment. Avista Utilities issued a press release late this morning and held a press conference at the Avista Service Center on the Pullman Highway. Here's the text of today's press release. Today, Avista provided an update regarding the restoration of natural gas services to an estimated 37,000 natural gas customers who have been without heat, hot water, and other services for the last 40 hours. This event has been the largest natural gas outage in Avista history. Avista has developed maps for each region, along with zones which indicate the order of restoration and a window of time crews are expected to be in each zone. Relight sequencing times are based on geographic location of the infrastructure. However, critical customers such as hospitals and medical facilities are being prioritized. Additional information about the estimated restoration times identified by area can be accessed by visiting myavista.com. At this point, almost all customers have already been shut off in preparation for restoration, and Avista's distribution system has been repressurized. With the help of over 400 crew members addressing restoration efforts, Avista is going through the process of relighting natural gas appliances between the hours of 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. The complete natural gas restoration for Avista customers is estimated to be complete by the end of day Tuesday. Customers will receive notification within 24 hours of their planned relight that crews are headed to their zone. The relight process involves a service person knocking on a door and entering the property when a resident or business owner is present. An adult will need to be present to let the service person inside. Customers are asked not to leave doors to homes unlocked. All field personnel conducting relights will have identification. Once relit, Avista will check the appliances in the residence. If the resident is not home, Avista will leave a card on the door upon the last attempt for the day, inviting the customer to call Avista so someone can come back to relight. Customers do not need to schedule their own relights. There is no cost to customers for relights or gas restoration activity. In rare situations, Avista may find appliance repairs are needed before proceeding with a relight. In these circumstances, customers may need to work with a licensed dealer to complete the repair. Avista can return to do a safety check. As this process continues, Avista will share information to customers and the public as it becomes available. That was a press release issued by Avista at about 11:20 this morning. We now have the recording of today's press conference, which was held at an Avista facility on the Pullman Road. The first speaker is Jared Webley introducing Avista Chief Operations Officer Heather Rosentrater.
There will be a corresponding news release sent out, so if there's any information that you're looking for afterwards, feel free to coordinate with me. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Heather Rosentrater, our President and Chief of Operations.
Thank you all for being here today. This is a serious event that I think most of us will never forget. Although, as a team, we've been working around the clock for the last 2 days for our customers, we still have several days ahead of us, and today I want to focus on our plan to restore the nearly 37,000 natural gas customers who have been without heat and hot water and other services for the last 40 hours. Our top priority remains the same, to restore natural gas as quickly and as safely as possible to our customers. We are aware of the hardship, the stress, and the frustration that people are experiencing, particularly with the cold weather upon us. Our team is doing everything we can to expedite the work. And as for the current status of the restoration process, I am happy to share that we've essentially completed another important phase of the restoration process. The safety shutoff process is essentially complete, and this was supported by over 260 Avista employees who amassed over 3,000 hours of work time to get this phase done. And we are now able to begin the next step of restoration of the restoration process, which is our customer relights. And thanks to our amazing employees, our peer utilities, our HVAC responders, by the end of the day today, we expect to have over 500 responders in the area supporting this final restoration step. And at a high level, we expect to have all customers relit by the end of the day this upcoming Tuesday. Through the incredible support we've received, we've been able to turn an incident that could have taken weeks to resolve into being able to restore everyone in less than a week. We will keep working until every customer is restored. This is the largest natural gas outage in Avista's history by far. The restoration process involves many steps that take time to ensure the safety of our customers and our employees. And we know having a more exact relight time is important to our customers, especially because they're required to be on site for that relight step. So to discuss in more detail about that restoration process and the relight plan, I would like to invite Josh DeLuciano, our Vice President of Energy Delivery, to the microphone.
Thank you, Heather. As Heather was mentioning, we are mostly complete with our initial shutdown process. And to start the relight, it's time-consuming, so I'm going to take a couple minutes to walk you through what we're going to do over the next several days. Avista crews have been going house to house around the clock to do the shutoff. And then as of this morning, we had completed the shutoff, and we were able to start preparing the system for repressurization. This process will have to go zone by zone, town by town, to get the relights started. We are starting the relight processes in those areas that are repressurized, and as Heather mentioned, the process is going to take up to 5 days. For the relight, what's going to happen is customers will have a knock on the door by an Avista serviceman. They'll enter the property when a resident is home. We'll need a resident to be home for this to work, so an adult will need to be present for the service person to be let in to do the process. We're asking customers not to leave their homes unlocked. And all of our field personnel who are conducting the relights will have proper identification. Once the relight process is started, Avista will check the appliances for the residents and the commercial businesses. If a resident is not home, Avista will leave a door hanger, letting them know that we try to do the relight with a 1-800 number that they can call us to get on the list to have us come back and check that. Customers do not need to call us to schedule a relight. We have a plan and a process for all the customers. As we do the relights, there's no cost to the customers. We will be sequencing the relights based on the geography of our system and our critical customers. We have identified 6 customer zones by city, and they have a 1 to 2 day window for relights. We have teams of people working each zone through the completion of the relight process. So we'll be working each of these zones until we get all the customers relit that are present and available to do that. And again, they can call us to let us know if they're amiss so we can come back and get them. Today, we're going to send an email to all of our impacted customers with the maps and the estimated time for each of their zones. This will give them a 2-day window to know when we're going to be in their area doing the relights. And then starting tomorrow, within 24 hours of us planning on doing the relight, customers will receive a notification on the phone. So if customers haven't updated their phone numbers, this would be a good time to do so they know we'll be in their areas. As a reminder, the relights will only occur between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. And then I'm going to show you guys some maps of our relight zones. So here's an example for Clarkston, and these are the maps that are going to be available on the web and sent out to customers. Each zone is identified on there, and we're going to be working sequentially through each one of these towns. So here's the Clarkston area, our Lewiston area, our Pullman area, Moscow, North Pullman, so this is up towards Albion and Palouse, and then the Colton, Unitown, Genesee areas. And then we have the lateral that goes out to Bowville, so that'll be one of the other zones. We will have people working actively by zone numbers. So, for example, we have Zone 1. We'll have people working there in all of the towns. Not each town will have to be worked sequentially. Each zone will be worked sequentially. So, today, Zone 0, that's on those maps, will be working for Friday, November 10th. Zone 1 primarily will be worked tonight and in tomorrow through the 11th. Zone 2 will be Saturday into Sunday. Zone 3 will be Sunday into Monday. Zone 4 will be Monday into Tuesday, except for Lewiston Zone 4, that's Sunday. And then Zone 5 will be Sunday through Tuesday. That's the cleanup areas that we have out there. Finally, I want to remind people of a couple of safety reminders. Please do not use any outdoor equipment to try to heat your home. Barbecues, other things not rated for indoor use can cause a hazard, and it's dangerous to our customers. So do not be using outdoor appliances in the home to heat. Secondly, Avista is the person who needs to come in and relight the homes. Now that the system is ready for relight, please do not take it upon yourselves to do the relight. Wait for Avista to show up and do that work for you. Thank you. Heather, back to you.
Thank you, Josh. Now, before I wrap up, I have the honor of getting to do all the thank yous because there have been so many people who have responded and supported this effort so well. We have many people to thank today. So first and foremost, I want to thank our customers. The stories we've heard about people helping their neighbors and even strangers say something about our community and the people who live here. And the incredible kindness the community has shown to our employees has been absolutely heartwarming. This is an amazing community that comes together in times of crisis, and thank you for taking care of each other. And speaking of the community stepping up during this challenging time, I want to outline several resources that are available in the community for those in need. The Palouse Community Center, the Latah Recovery Center, the Moscow location, the Moscow Unitarian Church, the Albion Community Center in Albion. And if you need their services, please call before you go. I'd also like to thank our partners, cities and elected officials, first responders, nonprofit agencies, and countless others. I'd like to thank all of our mutual aid crews who have joined us from 8 peer utilities throughout the entire western United States, from as far away as Wyoming and California. We've also received help from contractors and HVAC resources. And these dedicated individuals are sacrificing time away from their families to help our community. I'd also like to thank Williams Pipeline for the quick response and repair that allowed us to quickly move forward on our work. And finally, I'd like to thank our employees who have been working around the clock to restore services for our customers. So in closing, I want again to express my sincere gratitude for the patience our customers have had during this crisis. Avista will continue to work around the clock until all of our customers are restored, and we will provide more updates as the process continues. So now I will open it up to questions. Yes.
Heather, Glenn Mosley with Idaho Public Radio in Moscow.
Mm-hmm. Hi.
Could you address the issue of backup? I mean, this line is ruptured and that's it. So what is the story there with the backup or lack of?
Yes, and I think when we look at the design of our system and any upgrades or new lines to our system, we're regularly looking at the cost of that upgrade and just based on the geographic location of where the community is and where the pipeline is, and looking at the infrequency of the outages that occur, it just wouldn't be affordable for customers to have a secondary source to the area.
Thank you. Lee Robartis, KRFP Radio. How late at night and what sort of schedule would the relight crews be working on?
Yeah, that's a great question. So they'll be working from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. doing the relights.
And what happens if people try to relight themselves?
It could introduce a hazardous situation in their home if they don't relight properly or if there's a problem with their equipment and they're not qualified to identify that or notice it. So it could put them at risk if they relight without a qualified service personnel doing that work for them.
Guy Tannenbaum, KHQ in Spokane. You know, we've heard estimates of the number of customers without natural gas within, you know, the 35,000, 40,000 number range. Are you able to estimate the number of people that have been impacted? Because customers could be, you know, apartment complex, multifamily dwellings, hotels, schools, etc.
Right. I think we would have to follow up with you on that. I don't think we have that number.
James Hanlon, spokesman of you. Do we know how much gas was leaked?
Since it was a Williams pipeline rupture, we don't have that information. I would refer you to connect with them on that. Oh, go ahead.
Tom Handy, Whitman County Commissioner. You said, I think you mentioned something about prioritization for certain types of facilities. Can you illuminate that a little?
Right, based on our critical customers, so that would be customers such as hospitals or public safety or public health entities, the airport, customers like that. There's actually just a handful of them. It's not very many.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Eileen McCall, Pullman City Council. Both Pullman and Moscow have an extremely diverse community. Do you have enough persons of diversity out making these field contacts? I know several households that, due to their cultural backgrounds, are not going to allow men in the house. Do you have any women in the field?
I will follow up.
We do have some women, and we'll follow up to make sure we're being thoughtful about that. Thank you.
Could you talk about, Heather, the response the company goes through when you receive the alert? Do you have an emergency plan or strategic effort in place, or how does that work?
Yes, we have an emergency operating procedure that we put into place and call, and that starts a structured process of regular phone calls and people moving into different roles than they would have on a day-to-day basis. They move into their EOP, emergency operating procedure roles. So, yes, we move into a different structure that we have a pre-identified framework for when we go into these kinds of emergencies. And we have had these on the electric side more often than on the gas side, and so we've had opportunities to practice and implement these kind of activities before.
I won't use any colorful metaphors because I understand we're live streaming, but when you did receive the alert, did you know right away what kind of a moment this was?
I received the call from our director of gas operations. We were in a meeting, and I had to do a double take because of just the number. This is just unprecedented for us. And so, and then it was immediately, okay, let's get the command structure figured out. And then the first step is assessment. What are the needs are? And so I would say, once we knew the impact, within an hour, we were communicating to our peer utilities asking for mutual aid and support just because we knew how big it was going to be and how long the process it takes to get people here and to do the restoration work. So there was a moment of this is big, and then let's rally and do the work that we're really good at in responding in these kind of events.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is big not just for us, but for any natural gas utility in the country. This would be big.
And you're listening to a press conference from late this morning held by Avista Utilities President and Chief Operations Officer Heather Rosentrater and Avista Vice President of Energy Delivery Josh DeLuciano. The press briefing was held at the Avista Service Center on the Pullman Highway. We'll be back with the rest of the press conference in just a moment.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by Hotchins Drug and Hobby of 307 South Main Street in Moscow. Hotchins features a pharmacy, educational toys, and hobbies. Hotchins also sells and services hearing aids. You can call Hotchins at 208-882-5536.
As a doctor, I've seen too many women with breast cancer who could have avoided extensive treatment or even death had they just gotten an annual mammogram. Every major medical organization experienced in breast cancer recommends annual mammograms for women 40 and older. Please, if you're 40 or older, get a mammogram every year. If you have a family history or other risk factors, talk to your doctor about what's right for you. To find an accredited center, visit mammographysaveslives.org.
And we now return to the Avista press conference with Avista President and Chief Operations Officer Heather Rosentrater and Avista Vice President for Energy Delivery Josh DeLuciano. This was recorded earlier in the day.
What's the economic impact on Avista? Will this affect people's power rates?
We're working on collecting the cost, but I don't have an answer to you for that yet.
In the same vein of the number of people and the significance, have you guys seen anything like this? Not just with natural gas, but electric as well. I mean, how unprecedented is something like this affecting 100 mm-hmm. square miles of area?
Mm-hmm. I mean, our largest probably emergency operating procedure event that we've had prior to this was probably the 2015 windstorm that we had on the electric side.
And that was about half of our customers.
Yeah.
Broadly spread out through our system. And with natural gas, it's a little bit different, where the shut-off process and redive process, it's not damage repair that takes time. It's the one-on-one interaction with every customer to get the service turned off and back on. So it's a different event, but they're very large from a manpower perspective.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Nathan with CREM2. You know, there's two big colleges in the area. We've been talking to some of these students. These are massive dorms, and is Avista prioritizing any of the students at all, or going to get on them faster than some neighborhoods?
I know that we have our account executives and our regional business managers are working with our large customers that have impacts to large populations like the universities, so they are working directly with them to coordinate the response.
Tom Lamar, Latah County Commissioner. What time are you sending out this information to the customers today, and are you going to be backing that up with posts online? And I just want to say thank you also to Avista for quick information that's come out about all of this. It's been great to be able to have the county share it, cities share it to others to make sure that we're repeating that message out to people on safety and others.
Thank you. Yeah, the plan is to get it out as close to this press conference as possible, okay. So it should be online and communication going out to the impacted customers right away.
Was the pipeline on private land where it ruptured, or was it adjacent to private land? What was the situation there?
It was a Williams pipeline incident, so if you have questions about that incident, you'd have to refer it to Williams Pipeline to talk about what happened there.
Was there any part of the region that was more impacted than others in terms of, more customers in the LC Valley versus up here in Moscow Pullman, or vice versa?
It hit everybody equally around the same time.
Yeah, I'm going to probably get a lot of questions about how those zones were prioritized.
I would say they weren't prioritized. They were just ordered based on the geographic location of our infrastructure and how it was pressurized, and put a plan together based on that. And
yeah, the first step is to repressurize our pipelines. And so as we repressurize our pipeline, we wanted to start relights as soon as we can. So the pipe, as it goes through the system, that's the parts that we repressurize in a sequential manner. And that just ties to how we would start the relight. So we prioritize it so we can be working on it as fast as possible.
Good.
And same thing for last night. We prioritized the turnoffs because we knew we were going to have opportunity to start relights today. So we wanted to make sure the right zones were turned off so we could start the relights as soon as possible today.
Okay.
Anthony Kuypers, Moscow Pullman Daily News. Can you explain what relight means, what that process entails?
Right. So that's where we have to have a qualified person from Avista come. They're going to turn on the meter. And then they're going to enter the home and make sure the natural gas appliances start safely. That's pretty much it. So if they have furnaces, hot water tanks, or ovens, that's what they're going to check and make sure the pilot lights start. Or if they have electronic ignitions, they'll start as well.
Okay. Chris Mitchell, KLEW. So with the zones divided, are there the different kinds of zones are in, like the different service areas, depending on if they have like a hospital or something, like you said, it's not... zones or go directly with the region they're in? Or how does that stand?
The zones are really driven by the pipe infrastructure, where we have pipe and we have zones that we could repressurize, test, and then start the relight process. And they have mixes of use. If you look at the maps, there's all kinds. The Pullman one, there's commercial all throughout. The hospital's one area. So it's really driven by how the gas will flow through the system.
But that's like with the numbers within the map slots, like it can change. It could have...
I'm wording this poorly, but the numbers can be different. You have all the numbers in the multiple regions, but it's not all the same zone is in the region only.
So like zone one, there's a zone one for all of the seven areas we've identified, and mostly they're going to be worked at the same time, but a website will have the most accurate information, and then the email will have the timeline, timeline and the calls for customers. That'll be the best way to know when we're going to be out there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you using any crews from other contractors to supplement your guys' manpower in order to try and make this happen quicker?
Right, absolutely. We have the contractors, we have the eight different utility mutual aid crews that are supporting us from multiple different states across the western United States, and HVAC responders as well. So, yes.
What can we do to help you?
Oh.
I think as we start this process, be expecting somebody to come through your neighborhood. And again, the hours are 6 a.m. to 10 p.m., so they're going to be clearly identified. Meter access, just like the shops, we still need meter access to be able to get in there. I think those would be the most important things. Mm-hmm. And then we have a plan, and so just like an electric outage, it may feel weird that your neighbor might mention they have heat on, but you might not still for a while, and it's based on how our pipeline's set up. So we do have a plan. We're working those zones, and so if they're missed, they can call us, but we will be knocking on everybody's door in the community through Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Marcia Rio, KXLY. Those in Zone 0 and Zone 1, are they notified already that they'll be getting their gas worked on tonight?
At least Zone 0, I'm assuming, has been notified, and Zone 1 will be soon if they haven't been already. Yep.
Okay, why don't we do one or two more questions, and then, like I said, we will offer some time for one-on-ones if you want, but I just want to keep an eye on time here. So one or two more questions, anybody?
Are there any lessons you're going to take from this experience that you're going to use in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say the process has gone as well as it has because we've learned from our past experiences. As Heather mentioned, we've had large-scale electric storms before events, and so we really have applied what we've learned for that, for this sort of event. And so we will be applying our lessons learned, and I'm sure, because Heather mentioned just the scales is unique for a gas utility, mm-hmm. we'll definitely be sharing it with our peer utilities as well because of the uniqueness of what goes on.
Yeah, we had just been talking about planning a tabletop exercise similar to this with our other peer utilities, and so this is, you know, quite an opportunity for us to learn and share that across with our peer utilities across the country.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you all. I appreciate it.
That was a press conference with Avista Utilities President and Chief Operations Officer Heather Rosentrater and Avista Vice President of Energy Delivery Josh DiLuciano. The press briefing was held at the Avista Service Center on the Pullman Highway near Pullman this morning. After the press conference, I asked Latah County Commissioner Tom Lamar about the commission's emergency declaration.
Yeah, I just want to ask you real quick about the emergency declaration. What's happening with that, and how's that going to affect people?
Well, by implementing an emergency declaration, it gives us some options. Whether or not we use those options, I don't know, but it might help with acquisition or making decisions about anything, any money we need to spend or anything we need to do to help people or help the situation. So it just gives us an opportunity to be ready, and potentially there might be other funding available to replace some of those, that money spent. So whether or not there will be any State of Idaho Office of Emergency Management money, IOEM, I don't know if that will be the case, but if it is, then this is the first step to make that possible. Because it was not a natural disaster, the likelihood of that is lower because of that, but we might have an opportunity to leverage. And we've also been contacted by some businesses in the county that have had economic loss, and we want to, and if this helps them be able to get SBA loans, Small Business Administration loans, to help with economic disaster, economic injury to their businesses, that would be good too. So I know some restaurants have been shut down for a couple of days now, and may for a few more days, and that's really hard on people that are trying to, you know, to feed people and to employ people. So hopefully this will provide a step for them to be able to do that.
Do you think the county is going to be spending any significant amount of money dealing with this situation?
We don't know. We know that there are things that we've had to do, like provide space heaters, get space heaters for the jail, for example. We have people living in the courthouse, right, in the jail, in the basement. We need to keep them warm. And so we're doing things to try to make sure that people are safe. Yesterday we closed the courthouse and a couple other county buildings for the purpose of conserving energy, so that, for example, in the courthouse, we are able to use the electricity to make sure that we're keeping people warm, rather than, you know, operating space heaters in the rest of the building. We don't need to do that when there are people living there.
Right. So there's a lot of cold spaces that people aren't working in now.
Exactly.
So, okay. Anything else?
No.
All right. Thank you. That was Latah County Commissioner Tom Lamar speaking this morning after the Avista press conference. You're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors, including Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tiedye-everything.com.
This is the KRFP Evening Report. We now turn to our next featured segment.
What do we want?
Climate justice!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Climate justice!
When do we want it?
Now!
Extinction Rebellion on the Palouse held a climate rally and march today, starting at the University of Idaho and ending at Friendship Square in Moscow. The rally was planned before the methane pipeline rupture that caused a major natural gas outage on the Palouse and in the LC Valley. And a major issue for the rally was the expansion of the GTN Express methane pipeline, which is 60 years old and runs through the Idaho Panhandle and rural parts of Spokane, Whitman, and Walla Walla counties, and through Oregon down to the California state line. Information given out at today's rally might have been a little bit outdated because the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has already approved the pipeline, although there may be appeals. The information says TC Energy is seeking approval from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to increase the volume of fracked methane gas by 150 million cubic feet per day through the aging Gas Transmission Northwest pipeline by adding compression to the pipeline system. This 60-year-plus pipeline crosses 1,354 miles from British Columbia through northern Idaho, Washington, and Oregon. TC Energy, formerly TransCanada, owns the rejected Keystone XL and ruptured Keystone tar sands pipeline that spilled 588,000 gallons of oil in Kansas during December 2022. The GTN Express expansion project would accelerate climate change, harm public health and communities along the pipeline route, and contradict Oregon and Washington state policy commitments to reduce climate pollution. The proposal would result in more than 3.47 million metric tons of annual greenhouse gas emissions, the equivalent pollution of 754,000 additional passenger vehicles each year until 2052, or several new gas-fired power plants, and more than the annual emissions from all gas-combusting commercial buildings in Washington state. Fossil fuels exacerbate the impacts of climate change and cause a majority of the world's climate pollution.
As climate events like extreme wildfires, droughts, and floods plague the Northwest, communities must transition off fossil fuels to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. Communities near pipeline routes and compressor stations experience increased health risks, including exposure to cancer-causing pollutants. An Indiana University study found the proximity to greater amounts of volatile emissions from compressor stations is linked to higher disease and death rates. Research shows that residential gas can lead to high levels of nitrogen dioxide in homes, with long-term exposure increasing risks of respiratory diseases and asthma in children and mortality among all ages, disproportionately impacting women and low-income communities. Increasing pressure in the GTN pipeline, originally constructed in the 1960s, adds hazards. Greater compression makes pipeline failures more dangerous and damaging. GTN Express would leak fracked gas, primarily the potent greenhouse gas methane, into the environment, threatening climate. This project is inconsistent with Washington and Oregon laws that respectively require decreasing climate emissions by 95% and 80% by 2050. Expanding GTN volumes would instead raise emissions and release millions of metric tons of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases into the atmosphere every year. Through multiple collaborative motions, the Attorneys General of Washington, Oregon, and California are calling on the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to deny GTN Express. The pipeline expansion would benefit fossil fuel corporations while burdening utility taxpayers. Continued investments in fossil fuel infrastructure are expensive, lack foresight, and conflict with increasing building electrification, decreasing use of natural gas, and declining costs of renewable energy. Constructing and upgrading fracked gas infrastructure would force the Northwest into fossil fuel use for another 30 years. And if gas demand does not reach the expected level, GTN could ask the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission for permission to raise all utility rates. Current GTN customers, even those who did not contract for increased pipeline capacity, could eventually pay for this project. That was information given out at the Extinction Rebellion Climate Rally, which was held in Friendship Square in Moscow today. Here is some of that climate rally.
But no, the same company that tried to push through the Keystone XL pipeline and that owns the Keystone pipeline that just burst 600,000 gallons of tar sands into Kansas and that owns the Columbia system in the Northeast that ruptured and had a fiery explosion not far from Washington, D.C., not to mention that also is constructing the Coastal GasLink gas pipeline across unceded Wet'suwet'en and First Nations territory in Canada wants to shove extra unneeded gas through the Gas Transmission Northwest or GTN pipeline across North Idaho, Eastern Washington, and Central Oregon. This goes against all the climate laws in Oregon and Washington that have promised to cut back to zero carbon emissions within the next 20 years. It also brings gas into the Northwest that would be one of the largest sources of climate pollution in the next 30 years of this expansion project. So we don't need this gas, and we don't want this gas. It wrecks human health like all the toxic gases that come off of compressor stations. The ones they want to upgrade are in Athol, Idaho, in Starbuck near Walla Walla in Washington, and in Kent near Bend, Oregon. That means more toxic fumes for those pipeline corridor communities. And, you know, that risks their health, it decreases their lifespan, and it, for all of us, it's more carbon pollution, more wildfires, more floods. For instance, in Athol back on August 15th, there was a wildfire, only 60 acres, but it broke out only a half a mile from this pipeline and only 1¾ mile away from the very compressor station that they want to upgrade. And, you know, there's been 4 pipeline explosion or leak incidents since that time, one in Sandpoint in a residential area only a mile from this pipeline expansion, one down in Middleton, Idaho, which caused the entire town of 10,000 people to be evacuated, and people could hear the gas rushing out of that pipeline from a mile away. They said it sounded like a jet engine or a train wreck. Then, of course, there was one in Bend around the same time that this Palouse leak happened. It was just a little residential leak. But now, you know, all of us are without gas. We're without hot water. People are having to, you know, figure out other ways to heat their homes and bathe. And all because another gas pipeline ruptured right here on the Palouse. And it just goes to show that this infrastructure is really unreliable besides causing climate change. It's, you know, there's a climate crisis not just of fossil fuels warming our atmosphere, but of fossil fuels infrastructure breaking down. So why do we want more gas in a 60-year-old pipeline?
It's we don't!
Right on. It's a giant accident just waiting to happen. So thanks to everyone for coming out. And let's fight this pipeline. It's Idaho's fight. More than half of this gas is going to southern Idaho. In the Williams Northwest Pipeline, the very pipeline, although a spur line here in the Palouse, that just ruptured over the last week. So, you know, it's pretty ironic. The very infrastructure that's breaking down is the stuff they want to push more gas through. So, yeah, thanks.
Woo!
Thank you, Helen.
Yeah.
Here, I can trade you back here.
Hi everyone. So why are we here today? We're here to demand the GTN Express be shut down, but we're also here to have the City of Moscow and the University of Idaho to co-sign a declaration of a climate and ecological crisis. Here's the introduction for what we have drafted. If you'd like to contribute to it, you can check out the back of this sign or the other sign I have over there so you can comment on it. We would love everybody's input and feedback. In total, the following declaration of a climate and ecological crisis works to achieve the following. Acknowledge the overwhelming scientific consensus on climate change and the urgent need for immediate action to address the climate and ecological crises. Recognize the local impacts of climate change on our community and emphasize the importance of collective and immediate action at the local level to mitigate and adapt to the climate crisis. By signing on, you join the local organizations and individuals in our shared pursuit to build more fair and just climate futures, to build community, and to hold each other accountable in our collective actions to impact the global environment. So that's what we're here today demanding. We have a longer list of all the other specific demands, including divestment from fossil fuel companies, like the University of Idaho's investments in Exxon, BP, Shell, Saudi Arabian Oil Company, along with a lot of other terrible companies that have polluted our world. Cool.
Woo!
Please, please give us feedback on this stuff. We need everybody's input, okay?
So yesterday, talking to some people who are part of this campaign, I was told that another campaign to go after is to go after insurance companies that insure these things, and because without an insurance company, they cannot build these pipelines. By the way, the insurance company that is funding this or that is insuring this is Liberty Mutual. Just an FYI, they're also responsible for other pipelines too, and they've been real bullheaded, but that's a place we can put pressure on them. That and the banks that bankroll these large companies. And politicians, of course, but it's ironic that the
well, not really ironic, I guess kind of somewhat typical, but in Oregon and Washington, most of their legislative body has spoken out against this project. In Idaho, they roll out the red carpet. The attorneys generals of both states are very concerned with this pipeline. In Idaho, they will probably fight for it. So FERC, the federal...
Energy Regulatory
Commission. The Federal Energy Regulation Commission, FERC, okayed this back on October 19th. And there still are some appeals that will be tried, but we don't know. We just don't know. And at this time, we're gearing up for a direct action campaign that will be strung out over a couple of years. And hopefully we can stop this project because we don't need more fossil fuels at this point. And by the way, these fossil fuels, as Helen said, are coming down from Canada. They're on fracked Native American land. People die of poison. Their water gets polluted. And don't kid yourself. It's not natural gas. It's methane. And methane is one of the worst as far as greenhouse gases go.
Thanks, Cass. Everyone give Cass a round of applause. Okay, so thank you all for coming. I know that, you know, it's a chilly day, and we've got some work to do, and so what's really important is that after we finish up here, that we actually take some concrete steps. Please go over and sign this, and sign up for an email, and also add your comments to how we can finesse the statement on the... declaring climate emergency, because what is happening again and again is that the people at the top are avoiding reality, and we are the ones who have to enforce reality on the people who are supposed to be our leaders, whether that's the city of Moscow, whether that's the state of Idaho, whether it's federal regulatory commissions that do not regulate, that actually dysregulate our energy system and dysregulate the climate. We have to be the ones to tell them what to do because they've abdicated their role as the moral leaders of this country, frankly. Secondly, I do want to emphasize the connectivity of all of these issues. One more pipeline is just as bad as one more clear cut. One more step into indigenous territory is just as bad as one more species lost. We are at the edge of not only a climate catastrophe, but a biodiversity crisis that is unknown in the human history on this planet. The only solution, frankly, is for us as individuals to hold those people to account in any way possible. And I'm very, very proud of the few people that are here because you understand that. You feel in your heart that something is wrong, that something is not right in this world, and that we can change it. The biggest thing you can do is go out, make a choice, try to push these things on your leaders and get more people, because next time we meet up, we're going to want twice as many people, because this fight isn't going away. As long as there are people, they're going to try to swindle us with their oil, with their gas, with their clear cuts, with their dams, and with everything else that's been screwing this planet into the ground. So anyway, thank you everyone for coming here. Thanks especially to Helen for organizing this with the Wild Idaho Rising Tide, and I hope that you guys take some action today. Make some friends, exchange phone numbers. Let's get this moving, because the movement is only going to be over when all of us are gone. So thank you. Woo!
Do we want to hold this so I can take pictures?
Okay, I think I'm probably good. Yeah, I'm going to walk around with the sign-up sheet.
DSA wants to speak as well.
Let's get a picture of all of us in the French Square together, like we did on campus, you know? That's real.
Hey, can I start taking around the sign-up?
All right. Let's cluster up, eh?
Okay, Gabby, have you signed up?
My name is Matthew, and I'm here on behalf of Blues DSA, and I guess the message that I want to deliver to this crowd and to anyone concerned about the climate is, you know, one of the things that we were chanting on the way over here is system change, not climate change. But it's important that we name the system. The system that's causing climate change is capitalism. and the people who benefit from the fossil economy, the people who are causing immense destruction and damage around the world, are the capitalist class, the people who own the fossil infrastructure, the people who own the banks that are funding these projects, and who own the insurance companies that are insuring them. The people who are affected by the damage of climate change and the damage of environmental destruction are the global majority, the working class, and especially the working class in the oppressed poor countries of the world in the global south. The people who are benefiting are the capitalist class in the rich imperialist countries. And so we need a mass movement of working class people against climate infrastructure, against fossil fuel infrastructure, and for a planned working class alternative. And we in DSA believe that that's called socialism. And so we're here, we're in solidarity with XR and the other groups who are protesting this pipeline, and we think that the answer is working class people standing up against capitalist greed and the capitalist system.
Woo! Thank you.
All right, this is for the XR Palouse sign up. I know you guys are on a motion.
Hi, I'm Rhea. I'm with XR Palouse. And I'm here because, as Nick said, we one of the things that we're pushing right now is for University of Idaho and the City Council to declare a climate emergency. It is high time that we do that and recognize officially and legally that we are facing a crisis, an existential risk, something that threatens, you know, everything that we live for and that we love. Climate change isn't something that you can remove yourself from. We live in the environment, we live on this planet, and it is soon going to become very unlivable in many areas, increasingly more so. We already are seeing, you know, waves of climate refugees. As much as the government and or other, you know, higher institutions would like you to believe that we are okay, we are not okay. We are facing climate change right now. We are in a crisis right now. A lot of people don't want you to think that. They want you to go about, you know, every day thinking that, you know, it's okay. We have a lot more time. We have people working on solutions. We do have a lot of people working on solutions, but not enough solutions are being implemented at levels that actually impact people. And so we are here to sound the alarm, and we want, you know, actual climate action. We don't want empty promises. We want an actual livable future for all living beings on Earth. Species go extinct every day. Acres are, you know, lost every second of forest. And these are just the realities that we face every day. They are not fun realities, but we must face them because this is the world that we live in. And so we have a duty to protect it, to protect and fight for the things that you love and care for, to fight for the people around you and every other living organism on Earth. They deserve our protection. I think that we all have a moral and ethical duty to do the right thing. A lot of people aren't doing the right thing. For example, TC Energy, who wants to expand fossil fuels in the Pacific Northwest, which we do not need. We are already not on track to face climate goals. We are not on track to, you know, lower our carbon emissions so that we don't reach 1.5 degrees Celsius. We are not on track for 2 degrees Celsius. There aren't enough actions being taken, and so that's what we're here for. Thank you.
Woo!
All right, folks, let's do some shit.
Wednesdays at 7 p.m. at the attic behind the library. Occasionally, maybe at FOC. We'll see if you get on our email list. We can update you about any future actions or events that we will hold. We might also communicate on Signal, so if you guys are on Signal, that would be great. But you should definitely join XR Palouse. We want a strong activist community here. We would like to gather. We don't want, you know, it is great to have so many diverse groups, but we also want to gather everyone because we are stronger when we are all together. It would be great if we could all communicate and get together and actually work together instead of, you know, being so complacent. Okay. Thank you.
And that was from the Extinction Rebellion Climate Rally, which was in opposition of expansion of the GTN pipeline, which is scheduled to increase its capacity through northern Idaho, eastern Washington, and Oregon. The rally was held today in Friendship Square. And you're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. Before we sign off, we have one other news story from this busy week. U.S. Magistrate Judge Deborah Gresham granted a temporary restraining order Wednesday preventing Idaho from enforcing the so-called abortion trafficking bill, House Bill 242, which became law this year. The law, which Governor Brad Little signed April 5th, makes it a felony punishable by up to 5 years in prison to help an underage person get an abortion or abortion-inducing drugs outside of the state. The bill has an affirmative defense for prosecution if the minor seeking an abortion has parental permission, but that is not the same as an exemption where law enforcement must not prosecute if there is parental permission. Abortion is legal in nearby states, Washington, Oregon, Montana, and California. In Washington, minors can legally receive an abortion without parental permission, and in Oregon, minors 16 or older can receive an abortion without parental permission. The exact language of the bill says, an adult who, with the intent to conceal an abortion from the parents or guardian of a pregnant, unemancipated minor, either procures an abortion or obtains an abortion-inducing drug for the pregnant minor to use for an abortion by recruiting, harboring, or transporting the pregnant minor within this state, commits the crime of abortion trafficking. Judge Gresham ruled in a lawsuit filed by Idaho attorney Lourdes Matsumoto, the Northwest Abortion Access Fund, and the Indigenous Idaho Alliance. All of the plaintiffs provide assistance to pregnant patients so they can access legal abortion. The defendant in the suit is Attorney General Raul Labrador. Gresham said in her restraining order, the lawsuit is not about the right to abortion, but about the rights of freedom of speech, expression, due process, and parental rights. Gresham dismissed the part of the suit which claimed the law infringes on the right of intrastate travel. Gresham wrote, the state can, and Idaho does, criminalize certain conduct occurring in its own borders, such as abortion, kidnapping, and human trafficking. What the state cannot do is craft a statute muzzling the speech and expressive activities of a particular viewpoint with which the state disagrees under the guise of parental rights, as Idaho Code Section 18-623 does here. The statute plainly regulates expression based on content by restricting adults from engaging in activities that advocate, assist, and communicate information and support to pregnant minors about legal abortion options. Gresham also added that many of those receiving abortion assistance from the plaintiffs are survivors of abuse and minors. Judge Gresham also ruled that Labrador has so far failed to show the law serves a compelling state interest. She wrote, the statute's broad restrictions on procuring or obtaining abortion services and recruiting, harboring, and transporting encompass a wide swath of protected activities and are not narrowly tailored to serve the state's stated interests in protecting parental rights. And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, there is a wind advisory that will be in effect from 10 a.m. tomorrow until 10 p.m. tomorrow. For the Idaho Palouse, the Northeast Mountains, the Okanagan Highlands, the Coeur d'Alene area, and the Idaho Panhandle, southwest winds 15 to 30 with gusts up to 45. Gusty winds will blow around unsecured objects. Tree limbs could be blown down and a few power outages may result. Winds this strong can make driving difficult, especially for high-profile vehicles. Use extra caution. And the forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area. Tomorrow, 70% chance of rain. Mostly cloudy, highs in the upper 40s to mid-50s, windy. South winds 5 to 15, shifting to the southwest, 20 to 30 miles per hour in the afternoon. gusts up to 45 miles per hour. And on Saturday night, there's a 20% chance of precipitation, mostly cloudy, a chance of rain in the evening, lows in the mid to upper 30s, windy, southwest winds 20 to 30 with gusts up to 40 miles per hour, decreasing to 5 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 after midnight. Mostly cloudy Sunday through Monday with highs in the mid 50s on Sunday. With east winds 5 to 10, gusts up to 20, lows in the upper 30s to low 40s Sunday night. And Monday, mostly cloudy with a 30% chance of rain, highs in the lower to mid 50s. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can also adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button. And once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Also on the KRFP website, you can stream KRFP and listen to archives of all the KRFP programming in the last 2 weeks. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Have a good night.
Love's Kombucha is proud to support KRFP Radio Free Moscow. Love's Kombucha is a fun, lively, fermented probiotic tea that is craft brewed right here in Moscow. For more information, visit loveskombucha.com.